Hello, boys and girls. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Marking Out with Mike. Happy Wednesday, wherever you are. Today's episode is going to, of course, be results and reaction and recap from last night's episode of Impact, aired on Tuesday. So here we have the coverage for you on Wednesday. And then, as always, we've got the news and notes from around the wrestling world. A lot's transpired in the last 24 hours. A lot of actual big stories. Title changes, implications regarding WrestleMania already that we're going to talk about, and former talent coming back. So why don't we just start off right there? It was announced today that Fox has made the choice to bring Renee back. Renee Young is coming back to WWE. For one night only, she is going to host the season 2 kickoff of SmackDown on Fox. Of course, because WWE never has an off season, never takes a break. There's no real defined seasons, but this is the start of a year ago in October. SmackDown started airing on Fox. So Booker T and Renee Young are going to host a special pre-show on Fox. I guess that's going to highlight things that happened and things that we can look ahead to. So it'll be good. Renee Young has been pretty neutral and has remained a wrestling fan on Twitter and social media since her departure from WWE a few weeks ago. And I think it's a smart choice. I had some opinions that she might possibly pop up and work for the Las Vegas Golden Knights. For those that don't know, Renee does have a legitimate sports journalism background. And before she even came to WWE, she was a sportscaster in her native country of Canada. And she was even highly recruited by ESPN. For a while there, a few years back, it looked like she was going to be a member of SportsCenter or something, but that never really kind of came to fruition. And I guess she just chose to serve out her contract. And we know she's married to Jon Moxley, so he's probably making a pretty decent payday in AEW. And it looks like right now she's just kind of enjoying the time off. I think with COVID, she just kind of wants to let things go the way they're going to go. That's just a guess. It's not an actual fact. And we'll see. I'd be really curious. Again, this is just a one night only. It'll be good. She's been non-biased. We've seen her on Twitter actually with even more freedom than ever before to really talk about wrestling because she isn't locked in. So she can talk about her husband and AEW, but she could still talk about WWE where she has a bunch of friends. And then she can just analyze stuff really any way she wants. I would watch if she had a show, if she had a television show that aired. We've seen through this podcast, I didn't intend for this podcast to be a daily thing, but pretty much since I've started it just a couple of days ago, I think this is now the sixth show. I've been doing it for about a week. There's been so much to cover because Monday Night Raw, Tuesdays you got Impact, Wednesdays you've got the double dip between NXT and AEW, and then you've got Friday Night SmackDown, and Victory Road was last Saturday. So you have alternating months and weeks where between AEW and Impact, you might have a Saturday like pay-per-view or special, and then WWE usually at least once a month gives you something to talk about on Sundays. So there's very little downtime. I do the news and the notes every day, and going into this show, I was really concerned, am I going to have enough to cover? Is there going to be enough subject matter to talk about every single day? You know, is there really going to be enough to keep the discussion flowing? And the answer is yes. When you open up the landscape and you don't just limit yourself to one brand of wrestling, there's a lot, and they all have great things, and they all have not so great things. I'm kind of forcing myself to be an Impact Wrestling fan. I've always been critical of them in the past, but I wanted to be non-biased and kind of have things all out there. I want to make sure that no matter what brand you watch, what show you're into, I want this podcast to offer something for you. And I was joking on my Facebook today that somehow Impact Wrestling manages to be home to some of the best wrestling that's going on in the world right now and some of the most absolute worst. Even the stuff that's not maybe horrible, like I'm really over just a few weeks in this Brian Myers, Tommy Dreamer stuff. We're going to talk about it again tonight. Hopefully they're winding that down. Hopefully that's setting up towards something. They teased a whole bunch of nothing. Nothing really came to fruition on Impact. And then they also had some technical difficulties on the show. I watched it on Twitch because I don't have access to Access TV, which is the channel that it airs on. So I don't know if these problems were only on the Twitch stream or if they were across the board. But when I was analyzing on Twitter, other people were talking about it. And so what I'm talking about, and we'll go in more depth when we get to the analysis at the second half of the show, is Madison Rain and Josh Matthews were effectively muted. There was no audio coming from them for most of the show. I think throughout the entire two-hour broadcast, we saw and heard them maybe less than 20 minutes. Melissa Santos, Brian Cage's wife, who does the little in-between commercial break show when they go to commercials on Twitch, was even commenting about it herself. So I know it's a known issue. I'm assuming it was only on Twitch, and hopefully it will only be a limited thing because commentary doesn't seem very important. In other sports, you can mute and you can watch. Like, I can watch an entire basketball game on mute, and for the most part, I can tell you what's going on. Same thing for college football and other sports I'm interested in. But there are advantages to the commentator. I'm an aspiring sports entertainment commentator. I've done ring announcing, and it is something that I want to pursue more of once COVID ends and there's more opportunities out there. So I do completely support commentary when it's done well. But the issue, if you can't hear it, is you can't utilize it. When you're new to a sport or to an art form, the commentators are there to paint the picture for you. They'll let you know people's names. They'll kind of give you the backstory. They fill you in. I've always thought to myself, imagine if you watched pro wrestling and you couldn't see it, if that makes sense. So we just talked about how you can watch wrestling, you can watch sports, you don't need commentary, and you can generally figure it out. You'll still be able to tell by the referee's hands who wins, who loses, things like that. If it's a DQ, you can paint the picture. But imagine the flip side of that. Imagine if you couldn't see wrestling. Just like if it was on the radio, a good commentator should be able to paint that picture for you and make you see the action. They should be describing it in very vibrant ways. You should be able to listen to them say, you know, and Eddie Guerrero picks him up for a suplex and slams him down. He floats over into the cover. And you should be able to kind of imagine that. You should see that suplex in your mind. You should be able to imagine that individual's body turning when they say he floats over and covering the opponent for the three count. And it's something that I focus on. I'm a long ways off, but hopefully doing these podcasts will get me more practice and get me into a position where I can be heard more by more people and eventually open more doors for myself. But hopefully next week that will be fixed. So yeah, Renee Young, she's coming back and that should be pretty exciting. Other news and notes that we have. One thing I have on here that I wanted to start with, you've heard me in the past. I've talked about it like two times. This is already going to be the third time in six episodes that I'm going to talk about it. I kind of always try to come to the wrestler's defense. Not that they need me to, and not that this is even getting heard by a lot of people, but when fans try to bully the wrestlers and try to insert themselves via, I guess, the storyline on Twitter where they want to say like, oh, well, the wrestlers are playing a character. I'm playing a character too. I'm not really being mean. I'm just kidding. Well, people don't know that, and the wrestlers don't need us. The fans aren't watching it. No matter how big a Twitter following you think you might have, your tweet's only getting seen by a couple dozen people at best. You're not there to help. They don't need your help. You don't work for the company. You know, if you want to say, I loved what you did last night, or you want to offer some feedback or something, you can do that. But we've got to get fans away from trying to body shame the wrestlers or men bullying women, things like that. It's really crazy. But in the past 24 hours, I've seen a lot of weird stuff. So if you go on T-Bar's Twitter account, which I guess is the Retribution account. I don't know if there's a separate profile. It's kind of hard to follow that storyline right now. But he was going on rants on Twitter and insulting people and not saying, like, just for fans to get insulted and for it to be okay is for the wrestler to come in to a city like Sacramento and be like, hey, the Kings suck, just like everyone in this town. And then you're, oh, boo, this is my town. You can't talk about me and my sports like that. That's how you get heat by insulting fans. But when you're on Twitter and you're crossing the line and you're talking about an individual's appearance and how they look, and I see the female talent do it to the guys a lot because the guys don't know their roles and they talk a lot of shit to the women. And so you'll see them insult the guy's sexuality. You'll see them call people virgins and things like that. And I've never liked bringing someone's sexuality or sex life into a mudslinging contest. At that point, you're just at the lowest of the low. So it's an interesting point. And, I'm surprised that more companies don't do more about it. I mentioned something on Twitter, which is not ever going to go anywhere because I only have like 18 followers. So if you guys are on Twitter, give me a follow. Mike S. Flanagan is my Twitter name on there, and it's almost all wrestling content. A few little Walking Dead references from time to time, but it's pretty much all wrestling, a little bit of sports. But it's good. It's positive. There's no politics or anything like that. But what I had said after the Retribution comment that I had seen was, and I don't have the exact quote, but I brought up how interesting it is that WWE is running this anti-bullying campaign. They've called it Be a Star. They've called it different things in the past. And they're part of a lot of really solid, really good programs. They do stuff with Susan Komen every year for breast cancer in the month of October. They started that charity, Connor's Cure, which is for childhood cancer. We've seen them do the Make-A-Wish Foundation that they've partnered up with. They do the Be a Star thing, and they send Mark Henry to schools and Xavier Woods and all these guys, and they go in there and they talk about bullying. But then the wrestlers themselves are on the internet and are bullying. And I don't know if there's a line, and if some people just want to call it being a snowflake and you think that someone can't be bullied because they're too old. I don't think that that's true. I think with mental health and people taking things and the internet becoming considered more and more real life than ever before, I don't think you can have that. I don't think you can allow your wrestlers to do that. And I'm not saying anybody should be fired or anybody should be even reprimanded or written up or fined, but there needs to be like a known ethic among the industry where the presidents of Impact and AEW and even WWE need to say, hey, these people are coming to our shows. They're paying for merch. They're helping keep our company afloat. They're fans. Yes, they can be idiots, but let's just leave it alone. Like, if you want to try to do storyline advancement on Twitter, let it be the two wrestlers beefing it out. Let Paige go on there, or for a better example, let Zelina Vega go on there and tell Asuka she's no good, and then let Asuka come back and say something, and then let him say, oh, we're going to settle it on Monday night. That's fine. But you can't let the fans get involved. And the fans are tweeting constantly, trying to get that rub because fans want that in their mentions. They want to see that in their notifications on social media. I sent out a picture yesterday of this Mike Kanellis and Maria Kanellis action figure that I had bought. And I did a little cute pose where it looked like they were holding hands. And I took a picture and I sent it to Mike Kanellis on his Twitter account. And I thought nothing of it. I did it to Aiden English one time and he commented. And so I was like, ah, neat. So I sent it in and Mike actually retweeted the picture with a little caption. He's like, hey, what did he say? He said, this is actually how we sleep every single night. And I just thought it was kind of funny. And it was like, oh, cool. This wrestler that I admire and that I watch on television and that I literally play with a toy action figure of is mentioning me. And that's what these fans want, whether or not they're going to admit it or not. They want to feel like they got that, like they got that rub. Because for a lot of people, even if they never meet Rikishi or The Rock or Mark Henry or Big E or any of these people, if these folks are popping in on their mentions on their social media accounts, these fans are excited about it. And if it's positive stuff, then that's cool. But if it's just negative and it's just bullshit, it's not a good message. It's not an area that we need to trend towards, especially with kids have cell phones now. And that's so mind-blowing. Little children have cell phones and have access to things that they should not have access to. So the more as a society, as a global society, that we can do to keep a positive message out there, then that's the way it needs to focus. Because this Retribution storyline is not going to last. It's going to be over in a few months. Some of these dudes are probably going to get released. Some of them are going to flounder around and just be jobbers. And hopefully guys like Dijakovic will be able to drop this T-bar thing and go back to actually being a legitimate wrestler. So we'll see where exactly that's going to go. And we'll get back to that in a second. Not the bullying thing, but Retribution. So Thunder Rosa announced today on her Twitter account earlier this morning here on Wednesday that she has been forced to relinquish her women's championship. A lot of people on Twitter went in and told her how crazy that was and how the NWA couldn't make her do that. And had all these opinions. The only thing was it was not the NWA Women's Championship that she was relinquishing. If fans were to read between the lines, they could have figured this information out for themselves. But she was actually talking about relinquishing her Tokyo Joshi Pro International Princess Championship. So she won the championship in Japan back in January, but because of COVID-19 and the travel restrictions, she hasn't been able to get over from the US and participate in any shows and really advance that story. So here we are, guys. It's almost the end of the year and they haven't been able to do anything with that championship. So, you know, it's not a knock on her. It's just some of the circumstances. And you know, we've seen her defend her NWA title, both on Primetime Live, on the Fight app, and then pretty recently on AEW. So fans got a little confused, but she did say that because she hasn't been able to defend it, she had to relinquish it. And because her NWA Women's Championship is what she's known for, I think that's why fans immediately jumped to that. I don't know if most fans, even some of the diehards, are aware of what she's doing in Japan as well. So she did clear it up. There was a link that had the TJ PIP like link in it, which is the Tokyo Joshi Pro International Princess abbreviation. But the link didn't work. And when you clicked it, it didn't go anywhere. So I think when people saw all those letters, it was just random. And they were like, what is this? And so it just by default went to fans thinking that she was talking about her NWA championship. She did clear it up about 20 minutes later with another tweet and an actual video where she was in character. And she does what usually happens. Hey, I got to relinquish this title, but I'll be back. It's the title I never lost. So that'll open some storyline opportunities if she's ever able to get back over to Japan. And I say if because they'd want her. But I think she's going to have a lot of opportunities to do things stateside once the world reopens. I imagine AEW would want to offer her a contract, but because of her status with NWA, they probably can't right now. So we'll see. We'll see where all that goes. They're doing a good job with kind of having talent relations between companies and trading talent. So that's been really, really, really interesting. So you may have heard this if you've been paying attention to the news or if you've been on social media, but the governor of Florida today said that anyone who does events in open-air stadiums is allowed to operate at full capacity. So the news originally broke because he told the Miami Dolphins that they would be able to go to full 65,000 people capacity if they wanted to. It's obviously a really bad idea. Florida has been one of those states that spiked and has never really gotten COVID under control. So the idea, I think people are smart, and I don't think that even though they can go out in those numbers, I don't think we're going to see 65,000 people at a Dolphins game. But it's said that Vince McMahon, as we talked about, is looking to pull out of L.A., for WrestleMania next year, and maybe try to have a redo in Tampa, and maybe everything will just be a year behind. If things clear up, he can maybe do it. I think Vince is 100% willing to do a full capacity WrestleMania regardless of the backlash. I think if he would have been able to do it this year, he would have. But just at the last minute there, everything kind of started to fall apart and WrestleMania became switched up, and they did it at the Performance Center and we all watched it, and all things considered, it was a pretty good show. So we'll see what happens. That's sure to be a big lawsuit and a big mess between WWE and the people at the arena in Los Angeles that they were supposed to use, and a lot of bad press if they decide to go forward. So the NFL is going to kind of be the guinea pig. We'll have to see if the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Miami Dolphins do take advantage and offer it. The Dolphins have already made a statement saying that they will not be doing that, that they're going to stay at like 13,000 or something, which I believe is like 10 or 15% capacity. So they're being smart. Hopefully, maybe by next spring, we won't even need to have this conversation because hopefully things will be sorted out. But we will have to keep an eye on that and see how they exactly progress. So yesterday we talked about it and we had to kind of gloss over it because we had so much to talk about. But we got a little bit more time. We still won't be able to go into a ton of detail on it. But the Hall of Fame. We talked about it yesterday. Should it be a real place? Should it be a physical place? And I'm talking about the WWE Hall of Fame. All politicking aside, regardless of if you feel like it is a legitimate Hall of Fame, you can argue that it's not the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. But as WWE is concerned, they are able to deliver their own Hall of Fame. If they want to do that, that's something that they can do. They have built that company up for 53 years, and even has territory history, and they've acquired the WCW tape library, and they're in a position. We talked about where it should be. I think it should be in Florida, and ultimately, I think it could be a really cool experience because you could do meet and greets there, autograph sessions. You could even do smaller, like special events. Like if they were able to maybe attach it to a smaller arena or something, they could do like NXT events there or something like that. Like they could make it a really interesting, very lucrative money-making experience. And if it was interactive and fans were able to go there and maybe kind of have it like WWE access, which normally only happens during WrestleMania, they could have that as a place where fans like myself who have aspirations of being a ringside announcer could go in there and sit at the commentary booth, and maybe you pay for some package and you get 10 minutes to commentate a match, like a taped match or something like that. Or you can stand in the ring and get a picture taken, or, you know, there's all sorts of stuff. There's all sorts of merchandise opportunities. There's Tony Atlas was speaking about it yesterday on a different podcast, which is kind of what got me thinking about it. And he's against it. He's anti it because he's one of those individuals that thinks it shouldn't be because it's not real. But you're always going to have a dispute, even if there weren't so many politics and you could get a Hall of Fame that had all the old school history, that featured all the three big brands. There's always going to be somebody left out, and you're always going to have different opinions because people watch different things. And some people like high spots and they want to see dives and flips and crazy moves and kickouts and false finishes and things like that. And some people want to see a more pure grappling submission based match. So the idea of what's a Hall of Fame worthy and what's not is a little bit skewed. Some people will go with the whole NBA logic and just count championships and say things like John Cena and Ric Flair should be in there. But then you have guys like Jake the Snake who have never won a championship and should undoubtedly be in the Hall of Fame as well. So lots of interesting criteria there to be considered. So Raw did a 1.6 yesterday. They attracted 1.6 million people watched Monday Night Raw this past week. And I was reading today that that's actually down. They had some competition from Monday Night Football. That's always going to be a big competitor to them. But 1.6 don't sound too bad to me. I'm not no television analyst. I don't know anything about ratings. I know fans love to debate them, so that's why I bring it up. But that's what they did. Something to kind of keep an eye out for over the next couple of months here is Ronda Rousey. And whether or not she returns to WWE programming, she spoke to TMZ in 2019, and based on what she said, her deal should expire on April 10th of next year. So that means WrestleMania 37 could be her last major show with the company, unless she decides to work out a new deal. So that'll be something worth watching. Originally, it seemed like she was going to walk away from wrestling and maybe go have a child and try to start a family, but that's never happened, not yet, and it's not our business, but it seems like she's available and she's not doing anything and she's under contract. And I think she did have a passion for wrestling. I mean, I don't doubt her legitimacy as a fan, and she proved to be a good worker. We've seen a lot of celebrities come from other fields and it maybe didn't really transpire, but she was a good talent and I enjoyed what she put on. So we will have to see. WWE.com issued some injury updates, and two of them are just for kayfabe, but we're still kind of curious. I guess we'll find out tonight on NXT the condition of Kyle O'Reilly and Finn Balor. Finn Balor, it was talked about that he possibly could have a broken jaw, like legitimately. Nothing's come out yet, so I don't know. I can't imagine he'd be able to work through. I don't know how long a broken jaw takes to heal, but they're not going to let him hold the NXT championship hostage. So be curious to see. Not trying to hype up any clickbait or anything and make it sound like he might relinquish the title tonight by any means. But I am concerned and curious to see what happens tonight. See if he gets in the ring and he wrestles and he's just fine. Or see if they are stalling, or, you know, see if we have any clues tonight. But Adam Cole and Velveteen Dream are both listed as injured following NXT TakeOver 31. WWE.com issued a statement. It says that Cole suffered broken ribs and a contusion due to an apparent attack suffered at the hands of the powerful newcomer Ridge Holland. Holland dropped Cole's limp body at ringside following the conclusion of NXT. After that main event championship match between Finn Balor and Kyle O'Reilly, Undisputed Era, of course, at the end of that show came to his aid and called for medical support. So, we will see with that. Velveteen Dream suffered a kayfabe fractured wrist after facing Kushida at TakeOver. He forced Dream to submit to the hoverboard lock, and then he continued the onslaught after the bell. He put Dream in an armbar after the match ended, and so there's that. Those are the real ones, or excuse me, the kayfabe ones, and then there's what's going on with Kyle O'Reilly and Finn Balor as well. So see if Kyle O'Reilly does in fact have broken teeth, as it was said, or if it was just a little hoopla. So Ali came out on Monday Night Raw. Talked about it super briefly last night, but ran out of time. So he's the leader of Retribution, and it was widely believed for a long time that Ali was poised to be revealed as the mystery hacker on SmackDown, but they ended up dropping the storyline after Ali was moved to Raw. But now WWE has the opportunity to use this new angle where he's the leader of Retribution and to tie up some loose ends. They could argue that since Ali was able to hack into WWE system previously, if they do decide to reveal him as the hacker, they could say that Retribution's ability to get inside the building and wreak havoc in those early weeks when we first started seeing them, prior to them quote unquote signing contracts with WWE, that could all be chalked up to Ali pulling the strings, and it could just make him seem like a credible threat and a credible leader, because I do think some people kind of see him possibly as a jobber still, because he was on Main Event for a long time. But Retribution's doing their thing, especially T-Bar trying to get fans to be like, yeah, see? Yeah, see? Anytime a fan posts a opinion of why they think a certain wrestler would have a chip on their shoulder, those guys will usually retweet it. And there's been some interesting, compelling cases for Dio, because he was F5'd by Brock Lesnar on Raw that time, and for Mia Yim because she was held back, although she got a decent push. But there's a lot of good talent, like Dijakovic and Mia Yim, I would like to see eventually go back to their true personas. I don't want to see them remain as like Slapjack and Pancake and T-Bar and all these weird names that they have. So hopefully after Retribution's angle is over, they're able to go and do something normal again. So now we're going to jump into Impact and what we saw last night on Tuesday night, the Tuesday Night Delight. So let me bring up my notes here so I can cover the things. And so one of the things that happened at the beginning of the show, they showed a highlight package, and it was from when Rich Swann ran out at the end of Victory Road, and he stopped Eric Young from inflicting any further damage on Eddie Edwards, and it looked like he kicked him, and when it happened live, I didn't take any notice of it, but when I saw the replay, it looked like he was using the Trouble in Paradise. I don't know if that's actually true or if I just missaw it, but yeah, it appeared like he was using Kofi's move. I mean, I'm not saying he can't, there's plenty of guys who use the cutter and other moves, but it just seemed kind of weird to see. So might have missed seeing that, but oh well, I guess I'll save that. No, I'll just say it. This isn't related. This was under my news and notes. Major League Wrestling has announced the return of the Opera Cup. So they're teasing the restart for MLW. Contra has been releasing a bunch of stuff. And if you don't have the opportunity to watch MLW because it's not widely available, it's on BeIN Sports, B-E-I-N Sports, which is like another one of those really obscure cable networks. But if you go on YouTube, they give a lot of stuff away for free. You don't need an Impact Plus app or WWE Network or Honor Club or anything like that. You can watch past tapes. And if you're like an ECW fan, they've got that kind of same vibe going. It's like more violent and more adult. But so the statement they released is that the tournament for the Opera Cup was held annually for 50 years at the turn of the century at various opera houses in locations from New York City to Boston. The Professional Wrestling House Cup was a grueling multi-day tournament. After a 71-year hiatus, the Opera Cup returned in 2019. Thereafter, the league confirmed that the Classic would be an annual tournament hosted exclusively by Major League Wrestling. So COVID jacked it up, but it looks like they are going to try to bring it back for 2020 before the year wraps up and then continue. And the trophy looks cool. They've got a really cool, unrelated, but really cool looking World Heavyweight Championship. It's super big. It's like a square belt. It's really interesting. I kind of like it, kind of how AEW has a really big championship, and it kind of reminds me of how the titles look in boxing. So a cool belt that's worth a Google search. So Impact opens up. There's a recap. It shows Eric Young and Eddie Edwards. It shows their Victory Road match and how Rich Swann came in and saved the day to set up for their title match at Bound for Glory. Then they cut to the first segment of the show. Tommy Dreamer comes out first, and he's going to be facing Brian Myers in another rematch. I thought that their third match up Victory Road was going to kind of wrap it all up, but they are having a fourth match, and it was teased that we were going to see the Innovator of Violence. So I was really curious to see how that was going to all play out. So Myers comes out, and he's wearing his little COVID mask, his little blue and orange with this logo on it, and he throws it all off, and then he tells Tommy Dreamer that he warned him. And then before the match starts, he bitch slaps him. And then that starts the match. So they're brawling. They're all outside the ring. Myers hits a suplex on the ramp and leaves Tommy kind of writhing in pain. They continue to beat each other down. Myers is beating on Dreamer, and he just keeps saying, "I want the Innovator. Show him to me. I want the Innovator of Violence, Tommy." And then Tommy Dreamer ends up hitting a cutter. He gets a two count out of that. And then Tommy ends up getting a kendo stick. Myers gets it away from him, and then he starts hitting him over and over and over. And because it's not AEW, that actually resulted in a disqualification. So Scott D'Amore comes down. He's wearing his little Nokia-looking phone headset. He comes down to the ring. He doesn't really do anything, but Brian Myers leaves, and order is restored. Myers goes backstage, and it didn't really seem to do anything for the story. But, you know, they did it anyways. It's a agenda that they keep pushing. I don't know what exactly the end game is with that. But, yeah, so, I guess that's it. So, Tommy Dreamer won via disqualification. It was a better wrestled match than their Victory Road match, where Tommy looked really old and slow. But it didn't really bring out the Innovator of Violence, so I don't know if that's going to be continued and we're going to see that in the future because Tommy Dreamer's tired of being embarrassed or whatever direction. But I have a feeling that we're going to see that match again for a fifth time, probably at Bound for Glory, maybe a kendo stick on a pole match, maybe a hardcore match or an Extreme Rules match or something. Say it ain't so, but it's so. So next up is the Defeat Rohit Challenge. So Rohit comes out and is doing his thing. And he calls out. He says, "Anybody can come and fight me." So for the second time in a row, Willie Mack comes out. And I was like, is this going to be a thing? Like, Willie Mack always just challenges him. But before he lets Willie Mack compete, he says, "Hey, man, you already had your shot. Like, move on. Next man up. Like, somebody else has got to get a shot." So Moose is all disappointed, and he's outside the ring. And in a turn of events, a little surprise that happens is Jordan Grace actually comes out and accepts the Defeat Rohit Challenge. And she's trying to fight him, and the referee's trying to get them in position, and Rohit is stalling. He's like, "Oh, I got to stretch," and he just doesn't want to let the match get started, and she's like, "Get the match started," and she approaches him a few times, and Rohit says, get her away from me, hang on, I'm not ready." And so the referee's trying to get him to take the belt off so they can start the match, and he argues with the referee about how it's his belt and he can do whatever he wants. And then eventually he does finally take the belt off, and he kind of goes to turn and hand it out to ringside. And I think he was expecting the timekeeper to grab it, as they usually do. But Moose was right there, and Moose tried to grab the belts. And Rohit did not like that. And Rohit was kind of pulling it away, and they were doing a tug of war. And so Moose ends up letting go of the championship. And Rohit falls back. Jordan Grace rolls him up for a quick three count. And we have a new champion. A new X Division champion is Jordan Grace. Or so we were led to believe. Rohit ends up saying that there was a technicality and that the match wasn't for the championship and that the ring announcer never announced it as a title match. And therefore, it was just a standard Defeat Rohit Challenge. And he very condescendingly congratulates Jordan Grace on her victory and says, "But still your champion, you know, is myself, Raju Rohit." So as Raju's heading backstage after the segment, after the match, Scott D'Amore is back there in gorilla position, and he informs the champion that he's going to defend his championship against Chris Bay, TJP, Trey Miguel, Willie Mack, and Jordan Grace at Bound for Glory in a six-way scramble match. So We'll be curious to see. I really like Jordynne Grace. She's a good talent. I've quote unquote put her over on my podcast in the past. And she speaks on Twitter a lot about intergender wrestling. I don't understand it. I am a fan, and I think that the girls should have the opportunity to do anything that the boys can do and have equal opportunity and make money and things like that. But I don't want to see it. There's domestic violence in the world, and I don't know how you can tell a good story. I don't have a problem with seeing the girls like maybe strike the guys as outside interference or slap them or low blow them or do something to impact the match in some way. But I just don't want to flat out see men versus women. It's not something that I'm interested in. I know that there are indie promotions and promotions around the world that do that. Of course, Tessa Blanchard won the men's championship. I don't know. I think there's a way, like a woman beating a man for the 24/7 title is one thing. I don't know. Maybe it's not fair because the idea that women can't become the heavyweight champion is kind of fucked up. But, you know, they've got their heavyweight championship and the guys have got theirs. And it's just, I just don't see a story in which it comes out well. Because if a guy, you know, we saw it a few weeks ago. I think it was Eric Young. He was going to pile drive a woman. If a man attacks a woman, then that in pro wrestling makes him just a villain. It's crazy. He's you know, the most despised man in the locker room. But then if it's just a match, there's just nothing to it. Because if a guy loses to a woman, then it completely discredits the guy. And it just makes him seem like he's you got beat by a girl. It's the whole same tired schoolyard debate that we've seen. And I just don't see a way in which a guy can beat a woman cleanly and come out looking stronger for it. And I posed the question kind of hoping she would respond on her Twitter. I said it very respectfully, and I was like, well, what's the end game? You know, how does a guy come out? And she's not going to answer because, first of all, why should she? But secondly, it's going to undercut everything. And maybe in this match, maybe this is actually okay because there's five fellas and then there's a girl. So maybe something like sneaky can happen and she can win one for women everywhere. And that'd be awesome. But long term, I don't necessarily know that that's something I want to see in pro wrestling, especially on these bigger networks, on these bigger brands like WWE, AEW, and Impact. But that should be an interesting match to look forward to at Bound for Glory. And he's just kind of, you know, Raju keeps doing his honky-tonk man thing where he's kind of a coward, but he wants to be the champion forever. So he does little undercutted things. So the Rascals. Oh, and before that match, there was a segment that I forgot to mention where Moose was playing hide-and-seek and looking for EC3, looking for his heavyweight championship, because he wants to stop the funeral that's supposed to happen. So the Rascals take on Triple XL in a rematch, and they come out, and so the super heavyweights are really just kind of beating the crud out of the Rascals at first. It seems like maybe it's going to be a squash match. This was one portion of the show where the commentary did, in fact, come back, and in the few brief moments that we could hear them, I think it was Madison Rain or somebody had made a comment about how hard it was to beat the same team within a short period of time. So it seems like they were maybe going to do the thing where each team has a fall apiece and then it can be settled. Because Impact has a decent tag team division, so they have a problem that other federations don't have where they're trying to feature all their guys because they've got four of their top teams shooting for the championship. They've got these two doing that, and then they still have even more talent that's not being utilized right now in the tag division. So it's a good place for them to be. But the Rascals would eventually get a hot tag. Wentz would come in, get a little comeback for the baby faces, and kind of battle his guys off. And eventually they would deliver Hot Fly Flame for the pinfall win. And so they beat him. Two nights in a row, or two matches in a row, once on Saturday and then here again on Tuesday. And it was pretty much the same match that we saw at Victory Road. I would say the only difference was just that Triple XL kind of dominated a little more at the beginning, where it was probably more evenly wrestled at the pay-per-view or the special event, as Impact calls it. So after that, Jimmy Jacobs was with Rich Swann, super legitimate, not kayfabe doctor, just super obviously a real doctor. No, I'm just kidding. But they were talking to the doctor, and the doctor was putting over Rich Swann and was saying that he's ready to wrestle and everything is going to be fine. And they invited Rich Swann to stop doing his exercises and come over and speak with Jimmy Jacobs about his upcoming situation and his match, and to kind of put it over. As he does, a nurse, who turned out to be Eric Young in disguise, attacked him. He dropped a weight bench on his leg. He even took one of those round weights, and you didn't see it on camera because of they did a pretty good camera angle, so it seemed like he hit him. But he hit him with the weight and the leg, and Rich Swann is devastated, and he might not come back. He might not make it to, let alone Bound for Glory, but that might be it. That looked like a pretty severely possible broken leg. And we'll have to see if he's able to continue his career. So pretty good booking of Eric Young to kind of keep him looking like this maniac, like he'll do anything. And the two-time world champ is looking like he's in a good position, even if Rich Swann can. I don't know how he's going to wrestle on one leg, but we'll see. I'm sure they've got something in for us. And we ended up seeing a segment with what is the guy's name? John E. Bravo and his little like weird group with him and Crazy Steve and Fatu or Faju, whatever the fuck his name is. But they're talking about how they have no money. As you could tell, I'm pretty disenchanted with this whole storyline. John E. Bravo just. As a talent, he doesn't speak to me. He's not interesting. He's not funny. He's rude to fans in the real world. And just his whole gimmick is just a bite. It's like, I just don't get how he uses the Cartoon Network cartoons character's name as his character. And I don't really understand what his character is. I really don't understand what that whole like friendship and stable is. I don't know where a big Samoan, a knockoff Joker that apparently ages and lives forever, that has a monkey. Just the whole thing doesn't make sense. I know it's supposed to be crazy and out there, but it just seems sloppy. It just seems like if you were playing with your wrestling toys and you had plans for everybody and you were like, shit, what do I do with these guys? And you just kind of threw them together because they were the odd man out. And you tried to like say, oh yeah, these guys are together because it's a stable. It's kind of like what's happening with Retribution, where it just seems like it's random people thrown together. And it doesn't really seem like it's going to work. It was really cringy to watch. It was really bad acting. And I know these guys are wrestlers and they're not actors. But Rosemary is supposed to be the one marrying the guy. And Taya Valkyrie is like her friend. And she was going to be a legitimate actress in GLOW season 4. Maybe she could teach those guys like how to do something. Like, it's a tape show, especially like those segments can be taped. And I don't understand why you wouldn't work on them. Like, is Scott D'Amore and like the other people like, oh, that was good. That was really good. So I don't know. I kind of hope that Crazy Steve's whatever. At least in the ring, he kind of does something. But like Johnny Bravo or whatever you want to call him, he just doesn't seem like a character who brings anything to the table. And he doesn't seem to have any presence with fans. I've tried to do homework on him because I'm not familiar with this character. And he's got like 2,000 followers on Twitter. Like, he just doesn't seem. I know bands with more followers than that. So I don't really know what exactly the point of bringing him on television is. And Impact has had like a track record where they've brought guys on that they maybe shouldn't have brought on. Guys like Joey Ryan, who had a bad reputation with some of the fans before and it was a pervert, and then turns out to be accused of all this sexual stuff, and then he's released, and Impact doesn't issue a statement on it in any manner that I ever saw. So it just kind of goes back to what I was saying at the top of the program, where it seems like half of what's happening on Impact is really amazing, and there are guys like EC3 and Eric Young that were really good, and even Rich Swann to a sense, that was never properly used by WWE and the big boys. And now Impact is just giving those guys a chance to show what they can do, and I love that. But it just seems like there's some people on the roster that could maybe either use a little more fine-tuning or should maybe just be pushed out of the company altogether, because the talent pool of wrestlers available right now is huge. And there are hungry, deserving people out there that need a spot. And I get that wrestling can't be all serious and can't be all action and needs to have other stuff going on. But I think that, I don't know, if you're going to have comedy segments, they need to be funny. So the next segment was Rosemary and Taya Valkyrie taking on Tasha Steelz and Kira Hogan. Those two have been teaming up for a while now, Steelz and Hogan. So the week before, Tasha Steelz and Hogan had attacked the other two women and kind of left them lying. So that was the reason for this match tonight. It was an opportunity for these girls to kind of get their revenge because they were angry. So they come out and they do their thing, and it was a pretty good match. Nice to see some strong women's tag team wrestling, which is not a field that's always well represented across the wrestling landscape, no matter what the brand. But Rosemary and Valkyrie do end up kind of picking up the win after Rosemary was able to re-enter the match, and she ends up just kind of turning Hogan inside out with a big old German suplex, and then she obliterates Steelz, scores the win for her team. And it was a strong match. Like I said, it was a lot of good wrestling from the girls. After that, we saw the Deaners taking on Johnny Swinger and Crazy Steve. So this was just more storytelling that I didn't really quite understand, because Johnny Swinger seems to be a somewhat serious wrestler in terms of his character, and Crazy Steve is more of a I fuck around and screw around and do weird stuff and have this monkey that I play with. And so he was doing that, and they kind of were going back and forth, and then Crazy Steve didn't want to start the match because he wanted to play with his monkey. And so Swinger was like, well, I'll start then. So it's a pretty normal match from the beginning, and then they're fighting. And then at one point, Swinger grabs his fanny pack, which was at ringside. And the referee saw him and didn't want him to use it to cheat or anything. And so he throws it out, and he says like, oh no, my buddy was handing it to me. And he grabs the monkey, which I guess he was going to use as a foreign object somehow, which the thing is a stuffed animal, so I don't know how that was going to hurt or help them win. But then him and Steve, which I don't know if they're a new team and they don't get along or something, but they like argued over the monkey, which made no sense. And so he turns around and one of the Deaners is able to hit him with a DDT, and then the Deaners are able to beat him. So it was funny. The analysis, from Bleacher Report kind of sums up the same exact way that I feel, and I assume that they've been watching Impact a little longer. They say Johnny Swinger is a national treasure, but with that said, this was not good. We give it an F. So not good, in fact, that the less that is said about it, the better. So it's just not a good bit at all. So some other things in no particular order that happened. I don't know if I missed it, but there was no funeral for the TNA title. It was just basically EC3 dropping it off of a bridge and just kind of telling Moose that he needs to move on and kind of do his thing. We saw negotiations between Heath and Scott D'Amore for his possible Impact Championship. So they essentially... let me get to that section of my notes. I do apologize. They kind of go over Scott D'Amore Says he has a contract that he wants to show Heath, and then Heath counters him and says that he has one of his own. Scott D'Amore seems hesitant. He eventually takes off his cufflinks and rolls up his sleeves and says, "Okay, we're gonna, you know, go to battle and we're gonna talk this out and see what we can do." He ends up telling Heath that the payday is too big a payday, that it can't be justified quite yet. Heath goes on to say that he put a lot of new eyes on Impact and is going to help like sell merch and, you know, put assets in seats. Scott basically says, "You're no Olympic gold medalist." And then there were a lot of WWE inside jokes, which I guess were to be expected. Negotiations end up breaking down. Scott D'Amore throws the contract and then storms out. Which is cool, because it's now they're going to kind of keep stretching this out. Obviously, Heath is already signed to Impact, but this is going to be a good angle on TV where it seems like he keeps keeps kind of fighting for his job. There was a funny bit in there where he says something like, "I'm not no Sunday morning jobber," and then Scott D'Amore says, "Oh, you don't really get on Sundays, do you?" Kind of making fun of the fact that he never got an opportunity to wrestle on WWE pay-per-views. And then he says, "You're kind of more of a Monday, Friday jobber, right? Sometimes Thursdays, because Monday and Friday is Raw and SmackDown. And then Thursdays, I think, is when Main Event, which is WWE's jobber show, is live on the network." So it's actually pretty funny. Sometimes I don't like when these companies try to disrespect WWE, because it's just like, all right, guys, listen, you wish you were in their position. You know, let's just, everybody has their spot. Let's just, you know, do what we're doing. Especially a company like Impact that's so far down the totem pole. It's just funny to see them. They've tried to go head to head. But a funny bit afterwards to try to kind of put some comedy on it was Rhino was hanging out outside the office, super excited, ready to congratulate Heath on his new contract. He asked him how it went, and he says, "Oh, it did not. Does it look like I have a contract in my hand, Terry?" And he keeps calling Rhino by his real name. "Does it look like I have a contract, Terry?" And he ends up getting really mad and kind of going away. So some dissension possibly between the buddies there. And I believe that was about it. There was a segment kind of to end the show with Sami Callihan and Ken Shamrock, where basically they just beat up a security guard and kind of talked about Ken Shamrock's going to be in the Hall of Fame. And that was the show. So, I mean, there was a match at the end. Ace Austin and Madman Fulton took on the Motor City Machine Guns. The tag champs ended up picking up a victory there. It was a good match to end the show. But that's really what Impact gave us this week. Wasn't a great show. Wasn't a horrible show. But they'll have two more episodes left to try to get fans interested in Bound for Glory. Especially because that is going to be meaning that fans are probably going to have to download the Impact Plus app. I don't know if Impact airs their pay-per-views anywhere else. So fans do want to engage in that. That's going to be where they're going to get it. But, you know, if you want to watch Impact and you're like me and you just don't really know about the product, I say just force yourself to watch it. Just kind of get through it. Because just like any wrestling product, there's good and there's bad. I could tell you about things in WWE that I really like. The Street Profits are a high point. And then you've got your kind of lower stuff. Some people aren't into Otis. There's just, you know, yays and nays. You have to decide what's there for you. If you are like most Americans, Impact only draws 200,000 viewers, which is solid numbers. Let's not take anything away from them. 200,000 people paying attention to anything, whether it's wrestling or any form of art, is impressive. But if you are somebody who doesn't get that channel because you have normal cable like Comcast or Spectrum, you can watch them on Twitch. They're on Twitch. I was told that they're on Impact Plus, but it doesn't appear that you can watch those matches until many weeks after. I know I'm beating a dead horse. I know I've said that in the past, but it is a point of frustration because I don't think that Impact Plus really has enough to offer people to kind of justify the $7.99, but it's more or less like the WWE Network. I pay $9.99 just for the pay-per-views, and then every once in a blue moon, I'll utilize it for something else. They'll throw like an impressive documentary on there or something that I'm interested in. But $8, and you get a month for free. You get a 30-day free trial to see if you like it. I'm still deep diving it. I'm sure I'll learn more about it. I'm really, really hoping that over time I will become a more solid, diehard Impact fan. But they're going to have to cut out some of the cringy shit, because when it comes to cringy stuff on wrestling, they have some of the absolute cringiest. So we're going to leave it on a critical note, guys. That's all we've got for today's show. Stay tuned. Coming up later in the week, on Thursday, we will have Impact. We will have reviews on both AEW's big show, the 1-year anniversary, and then also the counter programming from WWE. Until next time, I'm tapping out.